So it's now my pleasure to introduce our first speaker for this session and a member of today's organising committee, Tim Andrews. Tim is a principal with Finity Consulting and leads Finity's natural perils pricing and climate risk practices. So please join me in welcoming Tim.
Thank you, Simone. Affordability, I'm not sure I'm a good person to talk about affordability. At work they definitely say I was pretty tight on a dollar. I have that reputation, so most things look unaffordable to me. My kids actually say, "Dad, you're not a very good dad, but you'll be a good ancestor one day." So affordability, Rob kind of introduced this a bit for me. He said, so the affordability issue, how bad is it? And that's essentially what I want to talk to today. I really want to explore, you know, we hear and understand to some extent that people are unable to purchase insurance, especially certain people in lower socioeconomic groups, because of the high price of that insurance. And I wanted to have a go at putting some meat on the bones on that to kind of quantify, well, to what extent does that happen? So that's essentially what this little session's about. So if we kicked off with that, the numbers start out pretty easy. The average premium for buildings and contents across Australia, according to ISA data, that's most of the market, and if we throw in the levies, then it's about $1,340. And if you compare that to average weekly earnings of about $1,600, it's taking about 80% of a week's earnings to pay for insurance. So that seems pretty affordable. We actually spend $700 per head in Australia per head on Christmas presents. I'm staggered by that. I wouldn't spend $700 on Christmas. That's $15 billion a year on Christmas presents and decorations. So anyway, I think we can all therefore on average afford our $1,340. But can we? So let me just help you understand how that has been trending over time. So this is a measure of that same, you know, how many weeks' earnings does it take to pay for, in this case it's just building insurance and it's without the levies, but I'm just showing it to give you an idea of how things have been trending. And you'll see for the last 4 or 5 years that affordability measure has been pretty flat, and it had increased in the period after the events when insurance prices were increasing significantly and that affordability measure deteriorated. Now that doesn't tell the whole story, because at the early part of that chart back in 2008, there wasn't a lot of differentiation in price across different types of customer compared to what we've got now. So Sarah was talking, and indeed Rob as well, about the address level pricing, and that's led to much greater variations in price across people. So For that kind of worst 10% of the people for whom affordability was more difficult, well, it's actually increased much more significantly for them than that chart would illustrate over time. But again, it's probably been pretty stable for the last few years. So let me start looking at a specific property. So I'm now in Ingham, so some floods there recently. This is also a cyclone exposed area. Here's the house I'm looking at. It's in I think you probably pronounce it Altars Street, in Ingham. It's nice to see it's raised, because there is a bit of flood risk here. The flood ARI in this area is pretty low. We know a bunch of things about the particular building, and including how far it is from the coast, 16 kilometres. It's got cyclone risk, and it's 1.5 kilometres from the river, so that's a fair way, but the area is so flat, it's unfortunately got significant flood risk. So I got a bunch of quotes for that particular property. And by the way, it's by no means the worst building in this area. If you have a look at a flood map for Ingham, it's pretty disastrous, and this one's one of the lower risk properties in the area. So there's a bunch of premiums that they're going to have to pay. So it looks pretty challenging for that person to be affording. Now, we know some more about this particular property because we know some stuff about the, or at least about the area. So we know some stuff about the demographics of that area. So this area sits in what we'd call Seaford SL2, so it's kind of the bottom 20% of socio-economic advantage. So the earnings there, instead of being $1,600, they're closer to $948 is the average earnings in this area. A chart there on the left of you'll see most of the people are in the bottom 20% of earnings or the next 20%. So for them to pay for their insurance, it's actually 5.5 weeks of earnings. So that definitely does not look affordable to me. So I then realised if I was going to take this analysis anywhere, I needed to work out a definition of affordability. So at what point is something affordable and at what point isn't it? There was the National Disaster Insurance Review that John Trowbridge led after the Brisbane floods. And when that was done, they proposed a, because they designed a scheme in that particular report, and they proposed an affordability threshold that they picked at a few hundred dollars, a couple hundred dollars at the time, above the average premium. So I think that now that would be something like a $600 average premium plus $300 for the affordability piece, so $900. I thought that might be a little bit low as a threshold, so I dug around myself. I had a look at the ABS Household Expenditure Survey. Now, what I found interesting about this, though, there's this group that are in financial stress. It's 15% of the population. That means in 1 year, those criteria on the right-hand side there, in 1 year they've kind of had four or more of those applying to them. So it's things like, you know, they went without meals, they can't heat the home, they can't go out during the week, they can't have a holiday, they can't kind of raise a couple thousand dollars if they needed to. So they're obviously in a pretty difficult place. But on the financial side, the whole household income is about $1,000 on average for these 15% of homes. And they spend about $520 on their home insurance. About half a week's of the household's disposable income on home insurance. So I looked at that and thought, well, it seems to me pretty hard to think about that house spending a lot more than $1,000 on their home insurance. Maybe they can push it up to $1,500. So I've actually settled on I decided to go for a affordability threshold of 1.5 weeks worth for those low CIFA groups. And I've kind of gone for the mid-CIFA groups and I've decided, well, they can probably afford a bit more, so I'm going for 3 weeks. And look, this is pretty subjective, but I needed to stick a stake in the ground somewhere. And then I've presumed everyone else can afford pretty well whatever they're charged. So if they were my definitions of affordability, the question is, how many people have therefore got insurance that's unaffordable? So all I need to do is to get, for every house in Australia, I need to know what their earnings are, and for every house in Australia, I need to know what insurance premium they pay, and I can work that out. Unfortunately, I don't know either of those two things. But I do know a couple of things, and so my approach to this was to... there's two particular data sets I've thought would be useful for this. One is the... for those of you market finesse, that's where... at Affinity, we collect a whole bunch of clients from insurers for a basket of quotes that's meant to be market representative. So I thought, well, for that basket of quotes, I can understand what the insurer prices were, and then I could use our view of the population. We can use defined to understand the earnings of those individuals in those homes. So this basket, just briefly, it's a market representative basket of people that quote. So it isn't exactly the same as the whole population because it's probably biased a bit towards the younger people, but it's got a pretty good mix across the CIFA scores, which is what I was mostly concerned with. So it's 5,300, about 5,000 risks, and it's about 50,000 insurer quotes that I've used for this, and I've attached the earnings to it. The other approach I've then used to get a understanding across the whole population, because of course 5,000 quotes isn't really enough to get a reliable sense, is I've gone for every single household in Australia, and I've attached our own peril scores to that, and again I've attached the income levels to those bits of information as well. Look, the downside with this one, it's not going to be as good because unfortunately not everyone uses our peril scores, so it's not exactly linked to the insurance prices, but hopefully it's got a pretty good correlation. So what does it tell us? So that high level view, this is using the market finesse 5,000 quotes. So just to give you first of all an overview, this is how that group looks in terms of how many weeks' earnings it's taking to pay their insurance. So most are in that 1 or 2 week bracket. Again, this averages about the 0.8 weeks. You'll see there, there's 59 of the 5,000, so about 1% of people are in that 4 plus weeks. So that's where our home in Ingham would be sitting, in that particular band, about 1% of properties. So I then have to overlay that on the kind of socio-economic profile. So this is a high-level view of that. The chart on the left-hand side is the average premium in socio-economic 20%. What are those called again? Quintiles? So you'll see the lowest 20% have actually got the highest premium. That's the first bars in blue. And the highest, the best 20%, the 81 pluses, they have the lowest premiums. So that's despite the 80% people. They've got bigger homes, they've got bigger sums insured in this data. The ones down the left-hand side have got smaller sums insured, but they've still got higher premiums. That's because the natural peril risk is more, and I'll show you a bit on this later, it's pushed towards those in the natural peril sits more often with those in low socioeconomic groups. So their average premium's a bit higher. Their earnings, of course, will increase as you get higher socioeconomic groups. So that time to pay is about 1 week for the lowest socioeconomic group on average, and it's only just over 50% for the high earners. So that's the kind of data I've used to then assess how many would fit in this view of whether it was unaffordable or not. So here's my three bands. I had those that the low band is where I said if it's costing more than 1.5 weeks, then they were it was unaffordable. And then the mid-tier, that's where if it was costing more than 3, and for the top guys, I've said they can pay anything. So when I put all that together, it was about 25%. No, in fact, it's more than 30% of that low socioeconomic group. For them, their insurance is unaffordable. And now I should say not all of them own a home. So if I went back to that data on those in financial stress, about half of those people owned a home. So some do and some don't. So when I adjust for that, these levels of these results give me that about 4% of the population, the insurance would be unaffordable, if I believe that. I compared that to kind of levels of underinsurance non-insurance in the market. There's various reports on that. They give different numbers. They're somewhere in that range of 5 to 10. I think it seems to me 5 is probably a bit closer. It's often 10. When an event occurs, they look at how many properties weren't insured, and it's a bit higher. But some of those are in those lower socioeconomic profiles, and that would explain some of that. So it's probably closer to about 5%. And I think it's fair to say, and look, this measure's not perfect, but it's kind of consistent with that 5%, and it's suggesting this affordability issue is one of the main reasons that people don't insure. The other drivers are, the other effects that it has is that they probably don't insure for as much as they need to where they do insure. And there's no doubt a whole bunch that, for example, don't insure for all the coverage. So some would elect not to insure for flood. I'm not going to show you my detailed population ones because I don't want to waste everyone's time. We can be talking up here. So I will just... This is then the view I get from looking at the population. And so this is every single household in Australia. And I've got my CIFA deciles down the left-hand side there and the average weekly earnings that are attached to each one. So a few things on here I thought I'd point out for you that are interesting. If you have a look at the average flood ARI, so you'll see for the low CIFA deciles, the ARI is lower than it is for those at the high CIFA deciles. And so that just reflects that the lowest socioeconomic risks or people, they carry more of the flood risks than those at high earnings. And I've analysed the kind of drivers for that, and it's not like if you think, say, around the Brisbane in Brisbane around the river, it's not like the lower socioeconomic houses are more often around the river and the rich people further back. In fact, it's probably the opposite. It's mostly a metro versus country split that's driving this. So there's more of the low socioeconomic groups in country areas where they've built in towns up around these on land that's low-lying around the rivers that flood quite frequently, and that's kind of the driver of this outcome. So the flood ARI kind of works against the low socioeconomic groups. Cyclones the same. So the lowest, and that's the second last column, you'll see the highest scores are at the lower socioeconomic groups, and the best scores are amongst the wealthier people. The ones that are interesting enough go the other way. So for storm, the riskiest people for storm are the high socioeconomic, and you can imagine they're up on the hill overlooking the water, first in line when the winds hit. So they've got all those kind of risk dimensions attaching to them, and a bit the same with bushfire. It's kind of more focused at their upper end, and these are people that can afford to build these nice places nestled into the vegetation, and they've got higher risk as well. But the overall outcome of that is with the flood and cyclone outcomes, there's a lot more of the risk attaching to those lower socioeconomic, and that's really the main driver for this affordability issue emerging. So in summary, the aspect I suppose I'd like to leave you with is I think there is an affordability question, that it is the main reason why, it's probably the main reasons why around 5% of people, maybe a bit more, don't buy insurance, is due to affordability. And it's mostly amongst the lower socioeconomic groups. It's potentially of the order of 30%. Of those groups, and perhaps not too much of the higher socioeconomic groups, which I think is kind of relevant when we think about potential solutions for what can be done about this. Thank you.